Our next case this morning is number 06-2298, United States against Luke Barona.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Morning.
Counsel. The sole question before the court this morning is whether Mr. Barahona's prior conviction in 1996 from the state of Florida qualifies as a crime of violence sufficient to have boosted or elevated his base offense level under the guidelines by 16 levels. And how do we go about characterizing this prior? There aren't many means for doing that, as this court knows. The first thing we look at is the statute of conviction, in this case, battery on a police officer in Florida. And with respect to that statute, I would call the court's attention to a very recent case out of the state of Florida, the Supreme Court of Florida, and this is State versus Hearns, and I apologize for not bringing it to the court's attention earlier. This opinion was issued the date I filed the opening brief in this case. What the state of Florida, and in fact the Supreme Court, has now held is that as a matter of law, that statute, that very statute in the state of Florida, battery on a police officer, is not a forcible felony. They examined that statute. They note that there's an ambiguity in the statute. It criminalizes both an unlawful touching as well as force against an officer. They emphasize the fact that the statute, if it didn't involve an officer, would be a simple battery in the state of Florida. It would be a misdemeanor. The only difference between the statute as a simple battery and the specific statute on a police officer is the status of the victim. But the conduct is the same. And they emphasize that the conduct really is a misdemeanor. And because of the ambiguity in the statute, they now say, as a matter of law, that that conduct is not a forcible felony. And I would urge the court to look at that opinion. It's State versus Hearns out of the Supreme Court. It's 961 South 2nd 211.
You brought this to the attention of opposing counsel?
No, I did not.
Well, then I'll have to ask you to file a motion, or rather file a Rule 28J letter, bringing that to our attention with a copy to him. And counsel for the government will have 10 days after that to comment on that case.
And again, I do apologize. I just discovered the case myself and, in fact, was in transit here when I did so. But I think it is an important case to be noted in this context.
Is your comment then that no crime charge under that statute could be a crime of violence?
They held that it's not a forcible felony. That's correct.
Under the facts of that case, I mean, certainly there could be a battery, which would be.
No, in fact, I think under the facts of that case, the facts were more aggravated. They were attempting to resolve conflicts within their appellate circuits in the state of Florida. And because you can commit an offense under that statute by merely touching an officer, tapping him on the shoulder is the example that the court examined, as well as, you know, an actual striking or, you know, attack, assault on an officer, they're holding, as I read it, as a matter of law, that this offense is not a forcible felony. Because in Florida, it can be used, like it is here, before this court, to elevate an offender to a violent offender by virtue of that conviction.
Obviously, we haven't seen the case, but it doesn't make much sense if you could punch a police officer in the face or hit him with a club or just touch him. It's all the same. It's not a forcible felony?
Well, I think the point may be that if, in fact, those were the facts of the offense itself down there, that they would have been charged under a different statute. And I'm not familiar enough with Florida law either, Your Honor. Your point is a good one, but that's my reading of this new case.
Well, Ms. Kistner, getting beyond the new case. Getting beyond the new case, did your client ever admit that he pushed the officer?
No, Your Honor. We're limited here. We have the information under which he pled. We have nothing beyond that. We have no plea colloquy. We have no plea agreement. We have nothing dating back to 1996, which tells us what the nature of the conduct was. The indictment to which he pled merely charged that he committed a battery upon a police officer while said person was then and there engaged in the lawful performance of duties by actually and intentionally touching or striking said person. So he may have touched him, he may have struck him. We don't know which it was. All we do know is a reference that his counsel makes at sentencing in the federal case, and counsel calls it a violent crime, but he's referring to the affidavit in the PSR, which we can't consider. And there was an affidavit from a police officer characterizing this as a pushing. Mr. Barahona never admitted it was a pushing at the time he pled in Florida.
So your view is that defense counsel's statement in the district court was nothing more than meeting an argument in the alternative. Well, if he did push him, this is what he did.
Yes, and it's completely reliant on an affidavit, which is unreliable, and none of us should give any credence to, and the court has said that in Shepard. He's not saying, nor is his client himself saying, I pushed that police officer. I struck him. I struggled with him. Nothing that would elevate this to an aggravated felony or, in fact, in this case, a violent felony. And I think that there has to be some showing that this was a forcible act, and we don't know that. And I don't think we can construe that here.
How would we resolve what it was? How should it be resolved, what actually happened, to determine whether it was a forcible felony or not?
How would we resolve it? Mm-hmm. In my estimation, we characterize this as an aggravated felony. We assess 8 levels to it rather than the aggravated or super aggravated 16.
And I mean, if we sent it back and the district judge was required to determine what the nature of the offense was, how would you determine it?
Well, it's a good question, Your Honor. I don't think that the defendant in this case could be asked or forced to admit the conduct.
And it would be up to the government, but how would you go about it?
Well, perhaps there is something, a record that exists of the plea back in Florida, which we don't have and which the federal court did not have in this case. It may or may not exist. We don't know what the record was there. Surely had there been a plea in the case back then on the record, and Mr. Barahona was asked and said, I shoved him, I pushed him, I knocked him down, that would be something different. And yes, the burden would be on the government to find that document or that record. All they have that I know of, and I haven't seen it, is an affidavit from a police officer.
What about the complaint? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, there's a reference in the PSR to an affidavit of the police officer dating back to the act in 1996.
It's entitled Complaint / Arrest Affidavit. Is that what?
I don't know that I've seen that, Your Honor.
It describes the offense. It looks like a police report.
That's correct, yes. It's part of the police report. That's right. But under Shepard and under Crawford, I would imagine that's simply not reliable to provide a basis, particularly where you're talking about almost doubling a sentence to make this a violent felony or violent crime. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kistner. Okay, now for Mr. Giroux.
Thank you, Your Honors. I have no reference to the Hearn case, not aware of it. But I would doubt seriously if the court held as a matter of law that that statute does not imply some sort of crime
of
violence.
We'll give you a chance to comment in writing to us.
Appreciate that. Going specifically to the concept of the whether or not the defendant admitted the conduct, which is really the heart of the matter. The government agrees that the statute encompasses both violent and nonviolent conduct, and the government agrees in this case that under Lewis and of course Shepard, that the officer's affidavit complaint is not sufficient for the legal documentation. However, what we have here is a classic example of an admission under Kendall that this court has affirmed to be a type of admission that the district court can consider when determining whether there is a crime of violence. And this is akin to a situation where you have both a subject and a predicate, and it is the relationship between those two in our common sense language that makes us believe, of course, there's a subject. You can't have description about activity without there being an activity to which that attaches to. We could all talk about how fast a horse races, and we can talk about that horse, but that implies there is a horse that we're talking about, and that's exactly what we have here. We have the defense attorney and the defendant himself minimizing it, characterizing and minimizing the conduct of pushing the officer. They know it exists. They know that's the truth, characterized by the PSR, because they never objected. They never said, oh, no, that isn't what happened. Instead, they talk about characterizing it. Well, by definition, or by at least by common sense logic, you would say, well, then that's what it means. Now, what could have the defense done differently? And I think that the court, in all due respect, is implying something that isn't there. It's the implication that the defense counsel could have said, or the defendant could have said, oh, let's assume, or arguendo, that that's what took place. They didn't say that. And I'm not trying to be hyper.
The question is there enough? And you have the burden of there being enough. And the question is, did you meet that burden?
And I would say that the statements of the defendant admitting to that conduct is sufficient under Kendall.
So we're on the same page.
Yes, sir.
We have to look at that statement.
Absolutely.
And we have to determine whether we think that's enough for the government to have met its burden.
And that's the case,
right?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And the government agrees with that. But I think that in order for the defendant to get around his own words through his counsel, that you have to start implying certain things about that argument and about the statements made about that argument. And I just don't think that the record either here or supports it, nor is it fair. Because if they really didn't believe that that was truly correct conduct or that was a truthful conduct, and they wanted to rely on their procedural protection under Shepard, they could have said, that didn't happen, Judge. Now, even if you think it happened, pushing isn't enough. Or, geez, it isn't that big of a deal because it was a long time ago, and I only got 53 days for it. Or all the arguments they made. But instead what happens is nobody says anything. Everybody is believing that that conduct is undisputed, that that conduct is in fact what exists.
Counsel, is your brief accurate in this language? At the same hearing, the defendant's attorney did not dispute the facts reported in the PSR concerning the defendant's battery of the police officer, nor did he complain about the use of the officer's affidavit in establishing those facts.
Yes, sir.
Instead, the counsel argued that in relation to the use of 353A factors, the conviction was over 10 years old, and he was arguing that this use to calculate the criminal history and enhance the sentence for a crime of violence unfairly increased the defendant's punishment. Is that what their argument was before the trial court?
Yes.
They admitted all the facts?
Yes.
And that's what she's contesting now?
Right. And the government believes that those admissions, by not objecting and characterizing and minimizing that conduct, constitutes the sort of admissions under Kendall that the district court was allowed to rely upon.
Again, I understand. In other words, there's a different argument being made here than was made before the trial court.
That's correct, right.
Thank you.
In conclusion, the government believes that the judgment of the district court should be affirmed, and unless the court has any other questions, I'll stand down.
Not, thank you, counsel. How much time does Ms. Kitzner have? You have a minute.
Make this very brief, obviously. I don't believe that the defendant in this case ever admitted to the dispositive conduct. He never admitted in a plea agreement, and I don't think there was one, that he pushed, shoved, committed a forcible act on a police officer back in the state of Florida. He didn't do it back then. He didn't do it at sentencing in the federal matter, nor did his counsel do it by way of omission. It's just, it's not addressed. And I think that the case is very distinguishable from Kendall, where the defendant there pled guilty and admitted to a battery of a dwelling. There was no question about it. It was part of a plea agreement, in fact, that he had previously done that. And then he was trying to wiggle out of that at sentencing and say, well, it wasn't really a dwelling that I burglarized. He was trying to skirt around the conviction itself. In this case, the defendant is not doing that, but by the same token, he's not admitting to any conduct here that would make this a forcible act. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. And again, Ms. Kitzner, you serve by appointment of the court, and you have our thanks for your efforts on behalf of your client. Indeed, we thank both counsel in the case, and the case will be taken under advisement.